House Committee on Revenue for April 14, 2015 will come to order. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2075. Mazin?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2075 is a bill that increases the tax on aircraft fuels. This includes primarily three different types of fuel. This is including aviation gasoline, jet fuel, and motor fuel gasoline. So the motor fuel gasoline is in your Section 2 of the bill. Section 1, obviously, is the first two. In addition to doing this, the bill also allows the Department of Aviation a 5% of the revenue raised and collected for administration and management of the funds. And then the bill goes into the five different distributions that it would like to send this new revenue towards. And it makes it five segments of 20%. And you have in the your SMS the those different 20%. The first one is for the commercial links between communities and rural communities and commercial hubs. The second 20% actually goes into three different uses. One is for insurance for the search and rescue, voluntary search and rescue personnel, and then the to outfit airports as emergency resources, and then to have grants for municipalities. The third use would be the aviation economic development, a 20% of the revenue to that, and the another 20 to be used in local airports as a federal match. So those are for the airports that have federal support, and the ones that don't have central support also get 20% of the revenue. This is to be effective on January 1st, 2016.
So very good.
That's a
thank you. Questions for Mazin? We have a fair list today, so I think I'm just going to start at the top and work my way down. Let's hear from Joe Smith, Mary Rosenblum, and Gail Jacobs, please. And if you'll state your name for the record and then give your testimony, that would be much appreciated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Smith. 13 years ago, I was appointed by Governor Kitzhaber to the Oregon Aviation Board. And Bill Wilkins, the then chair of the board, came to my house to educate me, or start my education, on the importance of aviation to Oregon's economy. And he brought with him a couple of magazines and started by simply showing me all of the ads in national aviation magazines for Oregon businesses. And I had never copped onto that, and I was amazed. And since that time, I've become very aware of how important aviation is to Oregon's economy. As a matter of fact, the most recent study says that it contributes about $26 billion, which is a reasonably good-sized figure. I was on the board for a couple of years, and then I served very briefly with this illustrious body, and then I was reappointed and served 8 years on the board. And during that time, I observed the Department of Aviation go up and down with problems. And finally, starting about 5 years ago, hit a steady incline up to where, at the end of my term, which was just some months ago, I would say that it was one of, if not the most efficient, capable, dedicated, effective government agency I'd ever had the pleasure to work with or observe. And as a former chief of staff to a United States congressman, to the speaker of this body, as the director of a multi-state economic development organization and a district attorney of a rural Oregon county, I have worked with a lot of government agencies, and I say that that I, the capability and the dedication of the staff now at the department is remarkable, and they need the wherewithal to do for Oregon's aviation economy what needs to be done, and this bill is a start in that direction. It is my pleasure to introduce our principal presenter today, Mary Rosenblum, who wears several hats. First, she replaced me on the State Board of Aviation after I was termed out. She is just finishing up 2 years as the president of the Oregon Pilots Association, and she serves with me on the board of Oregon Aviation Industries, and following her, you will hear from the executive director of Oregon Aviation Industries, which really speaks for business Oregon in the aviation community, and many thanks for the privilege to be here.
Thanks. I am going to have to swap places with you, John.
Okay.
Yes. There. Thank you, Chairman Barnhart and committee members. I'm Mary Rosenblum. I live in Canby, Oregon. I am a private pilot and instrument rated. And I did bring a PowerPoint in today to give you something to look at while you're listening to me. I'll try and cover this briefly and succinctly. The reason that we're in support of House Bill 2075, where we will pay more for our gas, which is pretty darn high right now, let me tell you, and we're asking the jet owners to also pay more for gas, is because we are looking down the road to the future of general aviation in Oregon. This is a statewide transportation infrastructure. It is the most effective way to get to a lot of our state outside the metro area. And right now we are very underfunded compared to our neighboring states. General aviation is changing. It used to be the recreational private pilot who flew off to air shows or the $100 hamburger. Increasingly, general aviation is business aviation. 13% of our registered aircraft today are business-type aircraft, and business aircraft production and use is growing. These are small, fuel-efficient turboprop aircraft that burn jet fuel. And they are more affordable by small business owners. What this allows is it allows businesses that find the climate, the tax structure, and the inexpensive power in eastern and southern Oregon the chance to connect effectively with PDX or Eugene, our commercial hubs. So in spite of the really prudent and, as Joe said, very effective work of the Department of Aviation, we have considerable unmet needs in this state, and other states are eating our lunch because of this. A lot of federal dollars come into aviation. These dollars are highly leveraged. We pay 10 cents on the dollar. And that if municipalities such as Burns or Cottage Grove or Cresswell cannot make their 10% grant match, those highly leveraged federal dollars go to Colorado or Idaho or Washington or California, who manage to meet those grant matches quite well. So a modest increase in our jet fuel, which would amount for the commercial airlines, who in all fairness are going to, who are the biggest jet fuel users in this state, we're not going to deny that at all, of less than a dollar per passenger flying out of Portland, will meet our aviation needs and give us a strong general aviation in this state for the foreseeable future. Otherwise, down the road in 20 years, we are looking at a minimal aviation transportation system in this state. Once our deferred maintenance, which is what pretty much all we're able to accomplish at this point, has gone on to a certain degree, you're not looking at repairs anymore. You're looking at replacement. Replacement costs for an airport with environmental impact statements and so on is in the many millions of dollars. We need to take care of what we have now. So if you can see on our current history of our fuel tax, we're at 1 cent per gallon. This is quite a bit difference in our neighbors. If that we are looking at 6 cents per gallon in Idaho, in Washington, where they have a 6.5% sales tax, the cost is more in the 30s when you look at $4.5 per gallon jet fuel. In California, it's in the mid-30s range, percent per gallon, cents per gallon. So even if we raise our fuel tax to 5 cents a gallon, we are still going to be a penny lower than Idaho, which is going to be our closest competitor. So it's not like we're looking at, A, the airlines packing up and moving out of state, and we are not looking at fuel sellers going out of business. If you look at the available revenue, what this bill will raise, it's going to raise about 1.7 in this first short biennium and about 2.6 million in this next biennium. And this slide in front of you gives you a chance to look at where this money will go. So it'll provide commercial, state-subsidized commercial air service to at least two airports. This is critical. We have seven commercial airports in this state, one of which is PDX. Eugene is the next biggest. And we only have two on the east side. So the east side of our state and the south is very underserved. Klamath Falls just lost their commercial air service, which has a big impact on that state. They have the National Guard wing down there, and there is a possibility that either Arizona or Florida will entice them to move out of the state because they no longer have commercial air service, and that's 40% of the tax base in Klamath County. It also will provide emergency retrofit and FAM grants, financial aid to municipalities. Emergency, there's a lot of concern about weather events or a great quake that's going to happen sooner or later, hopefully after all of our lifetimes. But airports are how goods and services are going to be disseminated in the event of major events. And there's a call from a lot of legislators that I've talked to provide airports make ideal places for generators, for emergency equipment, and it will be, you will be able to move goods and services in by helicopter and fixed-wing aircraft where you can't get there on the roads. Financial aid to municipalities, the FAA does not fund everything. You may not be able to do the work that allows business aircraft to land on your landing, on your airport. The FAA won't pay for that, but a financial aid to municipalities grant may pick up the difference. And also in such municipalities such as, say, Cresswell, where they'd like to bring sewer and water out to their airport, they have businesses that want to build hangars out there and move out there, and there is no FAA money available for that, and this would provide this kind of service. It will also help small towns that are having struggling to meet their 10% grant match hold on to those federal dollars. Letting leverage dollars where we're paying 10 cents on the dollar go out of state is not reasonable. That also includes 1.7 and then 2.6 million for economic development grants. These are to aid businesses. They may need a hangar. They may need to expand. This will provide the infrastructure support for them so that they can increase flight schools. They can use it toward expanded equipment, MoGas tanks, to the unleaded ethanol-free aviation car gasoline so that they can distribute it on those airports. And finally, the last 20% goes to maintain our state airport infrastructure. And this just shows you that we can look at producing about $8,350,000, not in the first biennium, but in the first full biennium per year. And this will adequately fund our general aviation system and give us a strong system with a lot of economic benefit for eastern and southern rural Oregon in the future. This is a breakdown of our tax structure. Again, if you look, we really have the lowest, even though you see a low direct per gallon tax from, say, California and Washington's 11 cents. Most of the states that have a commercial exemption on their direct fuel or have a low direct per fuel jet fuel tax have a sales tax. So even if we raise this to 5 cents, as I said, we will still be lower than our western neighbors. So the big question that I know you're all going to have to consider is, why should we ask the main user of our jet fuel, which is the commercial airlines, to pay for this tax? Because they are the biggest consumer of jet fuel, and they are going to pay the most. This is a state transportation system, and the money that pays for that ticket at PDX comes from the pockets of Oregon residents. And just as I pay for roads in Malheur County, and I don't drive on roads in Malheur County very often, we all need to, both corporate and private citizens, need to pay for the state system Plus, this benefits commercial air service directly. When we subsidize commercial air service from Klamath Falls or from Baker City, the people who ride into PDX on those aircraft in all probability are going to get on a commercial carrier, Alaska or Horizon, United, and go somewhere else. So we're going to bring business directly to them. And as businesses are more enticed into eastern, into rural Oregon, into eastern Oregon, southern Oregon, and the economic base of those towns goes up, and we have some great examples with Sisters, Oregon, for example, with more than 65 new full-time living wage jobs because of their airport, then people will have the money to get on an airplane and go somewhere on vacation. So as we increase the economic base for people, we also increase their ability to spend money on the airlines, among other things. So we are not just going to hand this money out in randomly to anybody. The whole idea is to have a selection system where we are asking for municipal skin in the game. We're not just going to give you a blank check and tell you to go spend it somehow. We want commitment from the community, a proposal for how that money will be invested and how it will return to the community, and then how much the community itself is able to invest in this. So this is a skin-in-the-game issue, whether it's air service, where they're going to have to demonstrate a passenger need, or whether it's a development request, where something such as an improved approach that the FAA won't pay for will allow commercial air service to get into an airport that otherwise is going to be diverted to Medford, say, in bad weather. So we're also looking at which airports to fund and which not. Some airports have much more economic potential than others, depending on where they're located, whether they're close to a major municipality. And that will all be considered. We actually have private groups right now, Oregon Pilots Association, where we maintain one airport already and are looking at maintaining a second. We have a number of little dirt recreational-only backcountry strips. And Idaho Aviation Association, backcountry.org, are willing to take these airstrips off the hands of the Department of Aviation. They're already doing the maintenance on a lot of them. What this bill is intended to do is to take a significant number of the 28 state-owned airports that we now have out of 97 public-use airports off the rolls. The state has these airports because they became financial burdens to their municipality, and many of them can become very profitable, self-sustaining economic entities. Take a look at Aurora. Aurora is a shining example of this as a state-owned airport that is at this point becoming the nexus for quite a lot of economic development south of Wilsonville. This is the intent. It's not just to hand out money, but it's to make airports something that will be a benefit to their municipality and an economic benefit to the municipality, and no longer something that the state has to maintain. Also, in terms of what else comes back to the commercial carriers in return for their dollar a ticket more that they're going to have to charge, is that, for example, the next-gen system that the FAA is developing, this is a navigational system that is going to allow the commercial carriers to come more directly into Portland or Eugene or wherever, and they will be much more fuel efficient. Right now, they have to kind of fly a roundabout approach pattern. And the next gen requires the installation of ground-based equipment at every single federal airport, federally funded airport, that will cost a minimum of $100,000. The commercial carriers do not pay this. This is paid by the municipal airport where it's located. And yes, the FAAs do this with FAA dollars, but it's still a grant match. So this is something that some of this money can help with the installation of the Aegis equipment. That will benefit the commercial carriers. It's a lot of fuel gets saved when you don't have to fly the current navigational patterns to get into the airports. So I have to say, I had to include the slide. I didn't pick on anybody in particular. You can go pick any five airlines off of the, this is off the Bloomberg report. The airlines are not exactly hurting. And I flew down to San Francisco to my son's wedding last week, and I looked at one particular carrier. There were four flights that day that went down to San Francisco. There was a $40 difference in prices between those four flights, depending on whether I wanted to go in the morning or in the afternoon or make a stop or go direct. So a dollar increase, which is all what it's forecast to be in terms of a PDX passenger, is not going to change passenger behavior. No one's going to drive up to SeaTac to avoid it. This final picture is really a picture of what we're looking at 20 years down the road. This is Crescent Lake. This is a small town north of Klamath Falls. It's out in the middle of nowhere. The runway on the left is what it used to look like 2 years ago. The pink can is there for reference. The runway on the right is what it looks at and looks like right now. That's a great big crack in it. And in fact, I think it was 2 days ago, the fire chief called the Department of Aviation very concerned about reopening this airport because they can't get Life Flight in there. They can't get emergency services in there. And as fire season starts, this is a big firefighting airport. And if you no longer can have fire equipment come from a reasonable distance, you're not going to be covered by air attack equipment and wildfire. So wildland firefighting is another big impact these airports have. And this is really what we're looking at in the future. So overall, while this is some pain to every individual who puts gas in their tank, the majority of our members are willing to do this. We piston pilots who buy avgas pay 9 times the tax rate that the jet pilots do, and we're still going to pay 4 more cents with this bill. But we do understand that we need to build a strong statewide infrastructure, and this bill will let us do that. So we really recommend you move it on with a pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you. My name is Gail. Jake is the nickname Jacobs, Jake Jacobs. I live in Westland, Oregon, just across from Merrillhurst, so close to Lake Oswego that I belong to the Lake Oswego Rotary. Thank you for your speech last year, Representative. And I'm the executive director of Oregon Aviation Industries, ARAVI for short. ARAVI.org is our website. I'm also on the board of directors of the Cascade chapter of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. And as you know, unmanned aircraft systems is a big potential for Oregon right now. In fact, we have a meeting Thursday in Kent, Washington, with about 100 people to address that industry. Our group was initiated by the Oregon Business Council as one of the many cluster groups in Oregon. There's an ag culture, high-tech culture cluster. And when companies cluster together, you see what happens in places like Hood River, where they have a dynamic industry with unmanned vehicles. You see areas where we have clusters of garment manufacturing and sports equipment and high-tech. So we are the aviation cluster for Oregon, and there are about 400 aviation businesses across the state, which are not just airports, they're businesses, they're manufacturing companies, and they're aircraft operators. They provide, across these 78 cities, about 7,000 jobs with an average salary of $62,000 a year. It's a good industry. We have in our group 80 members. We've been building our membership since we officially set our board together a year and a half ago. So in a year and a half, we have 80 members, and they're growing dramatically. We have 4 meetings a year in our members' facilities, and then we have 1 annual summit where we bring many state leaders and legislators together to get the latest word on aviation. Last one was in Hood River at the WAM Museum, and we had Senator Ted Ferrioli there. We had John Hudson, we had Huffman, and we had Senator Betsy Johnson. Some of the companies in our group, for example, are Garmin, Vans Aircraft, the largest kit builder in the world, in Aurora, Synergy Air in Eugene, Columbia Helicopter, airports, mainly rural, Prineville, Sisters, John Day. We work with colleges who are members, Central Oregon Community College, Portland Community College, and we have members such as In Situ, who has, along with many other companies, Gorge, created a whole new industry. As was mentioned, there are 97 public use airports across the state. You don't think of that. You think of 4 or 5 possibly. But 97 public use, and the Oregon Department of Aviation owns 28 of those, directly responsible for them. There are another 200 private airports, almost 250 private airports, many of which are open to public. I've personally landed at well over 100 airports in Oregon myself. Mary's probably been to even more. The issue we see is that aviation in Oregon is seriously underfunded as an infrastructure transportation system. And we see the needs to be met with House Bill 2075, many of which I noted in the document that I mailed to you in snail mail last month, and then emailed to you a couple of days ago. Thanks to your staffs who have responded that you've received them, that you have our information along with our website. But the issues, as Mary mentioned, is we need grant matches for communities that can't come up with their 10% to get the 90% federal. So they're leaving the federal money on the table or go somewhere else. Those monies go for airport infrastructure and safety and maintenance. There are also other grants. There's Connect Oregon grants, and there's a small community air service development grant that's federal that we could go out and apply for, and that would provide air service. And speaking of air service, although we have wonderful air service at Eugene and Portland and a lot of commercial going out of Hillsboro, the rural airports in Oregon really need some air service to utilize their infrastructure. Burns, John Day, Astoria, Newport. The seaport's now going to both Pendleton and North Bend. The reason they're going to Pendleton and they're still there is because there's a federal grant, an EAS grant, of $1.8 million per year, and that's why we have Portland to Pendleton. But if we could extend that to LeGrand and Baker and Ontario and John Day and Burns, with some other types and maybe even smaller airplanes, we could have commuter air service, and maybe the Port of Portland would be responsible for that. We need to maintain these airports, as Mary mentioned, and improve them and make sure that they're safe for pilots, for passengers. Things you don't realize, in many of these small airports, there are freight services come in once and twice a day delivering medical supplies and bank checks and things like that. I'm a member of Angel Flight. I'm a mission command pilot. We fly 200 passengers a year around Oregon for medical attention, and they're all coming from rural airports to the metropolitan areas. Little girl with a heart transplant, little girl with leukemia, a man going down to southern Oregon and coming back with cancer. And so these airports, unless you go out and watch what's going on, you don't realize how important they are for our information, for our infrastructure in Oregon. And we need emergency preparedness, the natural disasters. If the Cascadia subduction really happens, and you're well aware of all the work that's been put into that, we really recently listened to the National Guard's Adjutant General talk about a book so thick that is preparing for the worst. If the bridges are out and the roads are gone, airports can be our salvation. We need to keep them going. And finally, economic development, as Mary mentioned, there are companies, there are operators, and there are airports where with a little bit of assistance, economic development-wise, we can make a major difference. Government doesn't create jobs, but infrastructure can be created that brings them in with groups such as ourselves. So this bill, the Department of Aviation in Oregon has a little less than $4 million a year to operate on, half from fuel taxes and half from fees. With this bill, we could be $10 million, maybe closer to $12, which would allow us to begin to do what needs to be done in Oregon and bring our parity up to level in terms of our aviation fuel. The fact that jet fuel is a penny a gallon, and it's a penny a gallon 50 years ago, this needs to be addressed. It should be increased to 5 cents, which has less than, as Mary mentioned, a dollar per airline ticket in terms of net results. And this is not so much a tax as you look at it as a user fee, because the fuel increase of 4 cents a gallon across the board is paid for by the users of aviation, people that are using that transportation method. and what it benefits. It's more like a user fee than a tax. What it benefits, in our opinion, in our group, is rural Oregon. It's almost an urban-rural issue. Rural Oregon, rural airports need our assistance. We have the capability in the organization with the Department of Aviation and with ARAVI to really make a difference in the state of Oregon with our airports, focused on economic development. And I ask you to please consider House Bill 2075 is a very progressive move forward for aviation and economic development and transportation in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Are there questions for this panel? You obviously covered the whole thing. Thank you. Let me call the next panel. And I'm just going down the list. David Martin, David Ullman, and David Ulane. Three Davids.
Yeah, I think we must have.
We're not usually in the majority. My name is Dave Martin, and I live on Airport Way in Independence. And Chairman Barnhart and members of the committee, I support the bill. 12 years ago, my wife and I moved from San Diego specifically to participate in the aviation community in Independence. And more than 5 years ago, we finished the small airplane that we own. Vans Aircraft has already been mentioned. That's who supplied the kit that we've been flying now for 5 years. As a licensed and active pilot for the past 50 years and also as one of several past presidents of the Oregon Pilot Association, I realized years ago that the Oregon Department of Aviation was underfunded for what it is supposed to be doing, which is administering and maintaining the 28 airports that you've heard about. And the result is that much of the maintenance is put off, and I'll mention a bit more about that in a moment. Many of the airports that are in the group of 28 and other small airports are a major financial benefit to their communities. I think the point has been made here by others already on that. Aurora State Airport has also been mentioned as a major example of that sort of thing. All of the state-owned and other small Oregon airports combine as a network for emergency landing sites and bases of operation for likely disasters. The Cascadia subduction zone has already been mentioned as a likely future crisis which would call into use many of these airports. The lack of ODA funding appears to result in delayed maintenance, including infrequent cutting of the grass and, much more important, postponed repairs on things that are often safety-related. An example is that at Independence State Airport, the visual approach slope indicator system was out of service for more than a year. About 10 days ago, it was finally put back into service. As an occasional airline customer, I'll gladly pay the dollar extra in the ticket price that it will cost for the airline to implement HB 2075. Please move forward on this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I'm David Ullman. I'm president of EAA 292. EAA is the Experimental Aircraft Association, which has chapters all over the world. EAA 292 is fairly unique. We're at the Independence State Airport. We have about 170 members. I was not aware of this bill until about a week ago when it was brought to my attention. I mentioned it at our meeting last Saturday. We had about 70 members in attendance. We're all pilots. We all own airplanes. We all fly airplanes. And I asked the question, I didn't know whether I wanted to come to this session or not, but I asked the question of the members in attendance. I said, we told them what the bill was, said, how many of you were in support of it? It was unanimous. Everybody, these are all pilots, all in support because of what it does for the funding of the airport system.
And I suspect most of them buy their own fuel.
And we all buy our own fuel, okay. Yes. And it really surprised me. I didn't know what to expect from the membership, but it was overwhelming that I should come over here and make a a short pitch in support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Good morning. Afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I'm David Ulane, and I'm the Spokane-based Northwest Mountain Regional Manager for the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, which is known in the aviation world as AOPA. It's less of a mouthful to say. But founded in 1939, AOPA is the largest aviation association in the world. We have almost 340,000 members nationwide, including nearly 5,000 right here in Oregon. And I'm here to offer the support of our members in the state of House Bill 2075, which is very unique for us as an aviation association that represents GA pilots. We don't often find ourselves in a position of saying raise our fuel taxes, but in this case, given all of the circumstances that everybody else here has very clearly articulated, we think it's very worthwhile and that the system needs continued investment if it's going to continue to be worthwhile for the state of Oregon and for our members. We would offer that support, though, however, in the context of the other aviation funding bill that's currently being considered in the legislature this session. That's House Bill 269, which would increase aircraft registration and pilot registration fees. Our support of House Bill 275 would be preferred over the other mechanism of aircraft registration and pilot fees. They're burdensome. They're administratively difficult to collect. They take a lot of energy on behalf of the division or the Department of Aviation to collect. We think that the best mechanism for funding the necessary future of the aviation system in Oregon is best accomplished through this mechanism of House Bill 2075, and we support that and look forward to working with you going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? For Mr.
Yes, sir.
I take it that what we do to collect these taxes is it just gets added to the rate at the pump.
That is correct.
So that makes it administratively quite simple compared to the other possible approaches.
And that is, Mr. Chair, that is one of the reasons that our members prefer that. It is simple, it's easy, it's efficient, and it doesn't take any extra paperwork every year or any extra mailing of revenue. It is the most efficient way, not just in the state, but at the national level as well.
Great. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Hobbs Margaret, Neil White, Ronald Sterba.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, thank you guys for hearing us. My name is Hobbs Margaret. I am the airport manager for Sisters Airport in Sisters, Oregon, a non-FAA public use airport. I am here on behalf of Benny and Julie Benson, who are the airport sponsors and the owners of the airport. And most importantly, I am here on behalf of here to represent the Oregon Department of Aviation to support them, because they definitely need some help. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of backstory on the Sisters Airport for a little bit of context, and then I'm going to give you what you care about, which are positive results for Oregon. So backstory. In 2010, the Sisters Airport looked like an episode of Hoarders. It was full of construction materials and absolutely no space for anything else. And so in 2011, the airport sponsors, who have intense vision, bought the airport in the face of many people telling them to walk away from it because it was a bad business decision. So they brought me on in 2011 to help find grants and rebuild this airport. End of 2011 came around, and we, by a miracle and much help from the Department of Aviation, were able to secure a Connect Oregon grant. And in June of 2012, we put a brand new runway into Sisters Airport, and this is where the fruit of what ODA does began to grow and ripen. So since Connect Oregon 4, we put a new runway in. We now have 65 full-time positions at the airpark in Sisters. In 2011, I was hire number 7. There are now 10 businesses on or near the field. In 2011, it was 1. The largest company on the payroll on the airfield is a company called Energineering Solutions Incorporated. It is a renewable energy engineering firm. Their payroll last year was $2.5 million. They founded in 2007 with one person and a dog in a spare room. So essentially, my goal here is to just show you what general aviation can do for the local economy. I mean, certainly 65 jobs is not that much in Portland, Oregon, but in Sisters, population 2,000, it's a heck of a lot. So basically, what ODA does is they help support general aviation, and what general aviation does conclusively is to help support the economy. So if this this bill is somewhat of a no-brainer for the little guy, and I urge you to support it, and I really hope you'll ask me a question.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we'll hear from the other two, and then perhaps you'll get your wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Barnhart, members of the panel, I am Neil White, and I urge you to vote passage of this bill to strengthen the infrastructure of aviation in the state of Oregon. If we look at what aviation does in our global community, as the global communities and economies expand and airlines take deliveries of tens of thousands of new commercial jet airliners over the next 20 years, the demand for personnel to fly and maintain these airplanes will be unprecedented. In support of the tremendous growth, more in the aviation industry will need more than 1 million new commercial airline pilots and maintenance technicians between now and 2033. The 2014 Boeing Pilot and Technical Outlook forecast personnel needed projects that 5,333 new commercial airline pilots will be needed and 584,000 new maintenance technicians will be needed to fly and maintain the world fleet. Oregon has a strong aviation training facility throughout the state, but we need airports to continue this industry, and the passage of this bill will provide substantial abilities for these airports. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Ron Sterba, Chairman Barnhart, and committee members. I'm going to tell you about a personal experience working with ODA. ODA came to my assistance when I brought a safety item up. Now, Betsy Johnson, as a representative here in the state, helped keep Pacific City Airport open. It's not a long runway. It's only 1,700 feet long. However, coming in one day with the winds as squirrely as they are, I couldn't really tell which way I should be landing, to the north or to the south. At that point, having a windsock at the end of the runway is important to a pilot, as important as a flagger on a construction site on a highway, because it's either yay or nay, am I going to land? And it's really tricky. It's a person's lives. So I went to ODA and said, listen, we got a crisis down here. I really think it's a safety hazard to our pilots. Pacific City is really a fun city to fly into, have lunch, go to the beach. Sometimes there's no parking left when you go there. I went to ODA, explained to them. They contacted within 2 weeks the owner of the property close to the runway and said, if we put up a windsock, it may obstruct some of your view toward the ocean. Do you mind? And they said, absolutely not. So from that point, it was several months later, the new windsock was put in. And bless your hearts at ODA, thank you very much for making that airport so much safer. That's my personal experience, and I'm glad to be able to share it with you. I want the tax increase. I wouldn't mind if you doubled it, because the ODA is really deserving of it. I'm really happy, happy about the Oregon airports they do support.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Leininger,
thank
please.
You. I just want to thank everyone here, whether or not your name Dave, which I think none of you are. Sorry to say. Because what we're hearing today is from a whole lot of people who have other things they do during the day. You don't spend the whole day in this building during legislative session, and we're grateful for the fact that you drove here to let us know, that more taxes is a good thing, to let us know how you feel about this important issue. And in order to make that into a question for the gentleman in the red jacket, I'd like to say, how do you feel about that?
I think it's certainly very important for everybody to be able to participate. The drive over, the thing that I noticed the most was the lack of snowfall. And which really characterizes how much we're going to need some support fighting fires this summer. And at Sisters, we host the Forest Service all summer, and I suspect this summer we will be hosting them for longer than we have yet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative
Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chair. A brief question again, Hobbs, so that to fulfill your desire to have questions. Number one, why did you not fly over here?
I don't have a pilot's license. I graduated college in 2009.
Okay, just checking for the theme. But also, more seriously,
he's telling you he has student debts to pay.
Gotcha. I heard about that this morning. Also, so those 64 jobs, 65 jobs at the airport, do you have a sense of how many of those are businesses that were started since the airport? Or is it a combination of businesses moving that are already in town that move there because it's a good hub, it's a good place, and businesses that started because of the presence of the airport, most of one, most of the other?
The answer is both. I'll give you the biggest company is Energy Engineering Solutions, as I mentioned. They grew with the airport. Innoviator, which is a company that moved from Ohio to Sisters last year and bought one of the houses adjacent to the airport. Sisters is actually one of the few remaining through-the-fence airports in the state of Oregon. And so this company, Innoviator, which does secondary type certifications for 747s and stuff, which basically means that they can talk to the FAA and put missile defense systems on 747s and stuff, they moved in. And also, a third example, they moved in last year as a result of the upgrades at the airport and the enthusiasm of the airport owners, who actually also established the first aviation science class in the state of Oregon in Sisters 2 years ago. And the third example that I will say is a group of people from Ogden, Utah are opening up Skydive Awesome in 2016 at Sisters Airport.
Nice. And my last question.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is an over the fence?
It's a through the fence. And what it means is that you can actually enter the airport property from outside the airport property. Since we are not an FAA airport, we can do that.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Cresswell is also a through the fence airport, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yes. I have been there. There are at least a few houses where the garage is very large because they park their plane in it and then they taxi out onto the runway or the taxiway from the house. And so some of the facilities in Sisters must be like that.
Yes, sir. Most of them adjacent to the airport are. And what we're finding are people are parking their planes in there and they are also running their businesses out of them.
Right. So it becomes an office building or a manufacturing center or whatever.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I especially appreciate your enthusiasm for the work you're doing.
Excellent. Thank you.
Bob Hall, J.L. Wilson, Jody Weiser, please. Please go ahead. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robert Hall. I reside in Portland, Oregon. And I've been an Oregon pilot since 1959 and learned in Grants Pass, currently flying out of the Troutdale Airport. I can't get away from my drug of choice, aviation. I'd like to break just a little parallel between highway funding to the airports that we have in the state of Oregon. Oregon established its highway funding program. They established it the fact that the taxes were paid based on the vehicles that caused the greatest amount of damage. Cars pay a gasoline tax per gallon. Trucks pay based on mileage and weight. So the heavier the vehicle, they're going to cause more wear on the highways. Therefore, they're going to be taxed, you know, according to the way they put on the highways. Airports in Oregon are taxed exactly the opposite. That the light aircraft, the type of stuff I fly, we pay significantly more than the heavier airplanes. Small lightweight aircraft that use internal combustion engines are paying 9 cents a gallon, and we're not complaining about that. We're actually asking to add an additional 4 cents onto that. But we also want turbine-powered aircraft, which are becoming far more common than they were even 10 years ago, to pay an additional 4 cents a gallon on their 1 cent. It's still going to be the same differentiation between the price between avgas and jet fuel. When the tax was imposed in the aviation system back in 1919, all aircraft were fueled by avgas. They had the big reciprocating engine of the airliners, the big round engines, and so we were all using the same type of fuel, the same tax rate. In the late 50s, mid to late 50s, when jets actually started flying, these were the big Boeing 707s, which those of us with gray hair could remember those pretty clearly. And the tax was developed on jet fuel at that time somewhere, or I don't know exactly when, but at 1 cent a gallon. Why the huge difference in the two rates is conjecture at this time. I don't think any of us really know. Now, I'd like to bring up the fact that most people think that when you think of a jet aircraft, you're thinking of the big airliners that are flying out of PDX, in and out of Eugene, so on and so forth. Or the military aircraft. Those are the ones that are burning jet fuel. But in fact, as of now, 471 of the total 4,042 aircraft registered in the state of Oregon use jet fuel. That's 11.65%. Now, that number does not include helicopters, because there's a number of jet helicopters out there, but I'm using that figure because the airplanes are using the runway in a different manner than helicopters are. You can get a different figure there if you add helicopters in. The majority of these small business jets that are out there today, they're called small jets. That's not like the small airplanes most of us here today are flying. But these small jets are definitely significantly heavier than the piston-powered aircraft that they replaced. A few examples of multi-engine aircraft that are using jet engine are very common today. A Citation II, 12,500 gross weight. Citation 24, 10,950. A Citation jet is 10,590. A Lear 45, Learjet, 21,750 pounds. A King Air 200, 12,500 pounds. Now, the equivalent twin-engine airplanes that were used in those days might have been an example of a Cessna 401, twin reciprocating engines. That's got a gross weight of 6,300 pounds. A Piper Navajo, PA-31, they have a gross weight of 7,000 pounds. Now, each one of these aircrafts, that number I've just given you, can vary a few hundred pounds one way or the other, depending on how they're configured. This came off the website for Cessna, Piper, Lear, so on and so forth, where I got these numbers. There's another thing out there that I think is very important to keep in mind. You may have not realized what you're looking at, but you'll see these FedEx single-engine turbine-powered aircraft flying all over the state, in and out of Portland like little bugs. That's a Cessna Caravan, a Cessna 208. That airplane has a gross weight of 8,750 pounds. They're flying into PDX, correct. But when they come into PDX, they're coming from the small airports. They're flying around the state, delivering small packages, picking up small packages. Those aircraft aren't even registered in the state of Oregon. They're registered in Memphis, Tennessee. So there's an awful lot of those aircraft that are heavier than we're used to seeing on the runways. They're causing more wear, and they're paying significantly less per gallon or per flight than the rest of us are. An example of a typical light aircraft that we fly is the Cessna 182. There's bigger, heavier airplanes than that, but there are smaller, lighter ones than that. That's just a good, I used to fly a Cessna 150, which I just sold. It had a gross weight of 1,600 pounds. And there's some that'll go above the 3,100 pounds of 182, but it's a good representation, of what you're flying out there. So as you can see, the turbine-powered aircraft are significantly heavier, ergo there's going to be more wear on the runways. The point I'm trying to make here is for the long time, the light aircraft, the small aircraft using avgas are supporting our aviation system. And now we're just asking the turbine-powered and the light aircraft to come up with exactly the same increase in fuel prices of 4 cents. They're going to be paying 5 cents a gallon. We're going to be paying nine. But this will help get our airports funded. It will help get our...
I think you mean 13, don't you?
I mean 13, yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you. So that'll help quite a bit, getting our airports maintained and funding the Oregon Department of Aviation. Just a quick actual example. I attended a meeting a couple of months ago out at Aurora at the Jet Center out there. And I made the mistake of sitting facing the runway. Well, pilots watch airplanes. You don't follow the meetings. But I think, I know for a certainty, I saw five light jets come in, take off, drop off passengers, pick up passengers at Aurora, you know, on that afternoon. We were there for maybe an hour and 20 minutes, something in that time frame. Admittedly, late afternoon is the time most of that traffic is going to take place. But that's still a significant number of turbine-powered airplanes that are coming in, landing, taking off. These are business airplanes. I'd like to, you know, just something that this figure that just came out a few minutes ago about the fact that 500,000, according to Boeing, going to need 500,000 new commercial pilots in the near future. Historically, our pilots have come out of the airlines. The military now is retaining their pilots. They're paying them higher. They're treating them better, and they're sticking around. So that source of training has come up. The training now is coming out of general aviation, and the majority of new pilots entering the system is entering through the general aviation door. I'll be glad to try to answer any questions, and please urge your support for 2075.
Okay. So Hobbs has a chance yet.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Oregon State Chambers of Commerce, 67 chambers of commerce throughout the state, and they've identified House Bill 2075 as a key economic development bill, and we support it. Primarily, it's an issue of rural economic development, and that's the sensitivity that these chamber directors and leaders really bring to this topic, because we're concerned about what we see in terms of the isolation of rural communities that happen to coincide with the deteriorating conditions of their airports, and we need to find a long-lasting solution for that. And it can't be just a Grow Oregon allocation year after year. This is more in line with a long-term solution that we're looking for. So these airports support economic development, business activity. They move goods and services to all corners of the state, and for that reason we support it and ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jody.
For the record, Jody Weiser with Taxpayers Oregon. I think this is fun. We're on the same side of the bill.
I noticed that, but wasn't decided not to mention it.
You know, our fuel taxes are amongst the lowest in the country. And it's interesting because you are aware of the fuel taxes for automobiles and trucks in neighboring states. But probably if you're looking at that map that the Tax Foundation put out, you can see that probably aviation fuel taxes have nothing to do with logic and have largely to do with politics, because it obviously, if you look at Illinois with their very high taxes, they're also a hub. And you look at Texas, they've got a lot of traffic through Texas. They have zero taxes. And so it's about what's happened in buildings around the country and legislatures, who's made the decisions. There have been efforts to raise the aviation fuel tax in Oregon over the last several sessions, and they haven't gotten a hearing. And it's time for this change to happen. If you look at the, if you think about it, we have a rule in the state that our roads, that transportation system, is supposed to be funded by gas taxes and only gas taxes. Aviation has been getting an average of $20 million a biennium in Connect Oregon funds to help keep those airports going, and they're still struggling, as you can see with the picture that you saw earlier of the airport. It's not working, and this is a solution. In fact, we would recommend that you raise the price to more than the 5 and 13 cents in this proposal. With the current tax, we're getting about almost $4 million a year in small plane and jet fuel taxes. And the increase, the annual revenue increase, if you make the changes that are suggested, would give us another $8 million a year. If you raised it to 12 which is just below Colorado, it would give you $19.5 million a year. I called Colorado because their website said they receive no general fund or other money. They're fully supported by their fuel taxes. And I called them and said, is that really true? And they said, oh, we would be embarrassed to ask the government, the general fund for any money. I said, well, what about lottery funds or some other source of funds? And they said, the guy said, well, wait. About 20 years ago, we did ask for $500,000 because we were putting a signal system in across the mountain ranges, and it was pretty expensive. A $500,000 versus $20 million biennium is really a different ask of the public to support this infrastructure. And so raising the fuel tax, it makes a big difference. In every state, most of the money to support the statewide system comes from the major airport for that state, whatever it is. In Colorado, they said, I'm not remembering for sure whether it was 80 or 90% of the money comes from the Denver airport. And PDX would be where most fuel would spot here, too. And then that money would help support the whole state's infrastructure for aviation. And it's an important part of what makes a state work. But it's time for the aviation infrastructure to be self-supporting, just like the road infrastructure is.
Thank you very much. Questions? Mr. Wilson, we've heard about Sisters and their success story. Are there others? Or is that repeatable? Can that be done in other places like Burns or Cresswell or other spots?
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. Well, the local community sure think it's achievable, and that's why you see such widespread support with the local chambers on the bill. But I don't, Aurora's obviously stands out too. But you've got little rural economies there that want that chance and want that opportunity, and that's why they support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So part of the question, I suppose, is how much increased volume of traffic can these smaller airports anticipate as we move into this future of smaller jets, and all of the discussions about the new availability of newer electronic systems and other things making flying safer. Is it correct for us to assume that if we invest all this money in these local rural areas, we're going to see more air traffic? Is that the future, or are we going to continue to see a decline in actual planes out there in the air?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I'll try to answer that. I can't give you any definitive numbers or anything else. I don't have them with me now. We can get them for you. But currently, general aviation airports are funded by the light aircraft, the type of stuff that I fly. We are seeing now a large increase in the turbine-powered aircraft, as you saw with the numbers that I gave. And as that happens, that we're seeing a shift, in the usage. I would tend to think, and this is, I can't give you any empirical evidence towards right now, but I would tend to think that as our airports are better and economic development, people want to move out of the big metropolitan areas. They want to get out to I was raised in Grants Pass. I'd love to get back to Grants Pass, but our family and our grandkids are in Portland. But a lot of companies now are wanting to get out of that area. Well, they're going to have access to commercial aviation, to accomplish that, because the engineers and the people they're hiring want to raise their families in these smaller towns. So I think the answer to your question is going to be that probably is going to have an increase in aviation. The aircrafts are going to get bigger, but the amount of avgas that are the airplanes that I fly is going to decrease. Most of those pilots here that are talking today, if you take a look at the color of our hair, it's an economic issue. And so I think that's does that try to answer your question?
Well, yes, it does, and thank you for that. I guess the issue is, will these smaller jets like Honda is coming out with and these other things, Warren Buffett's shared jet time, all those things, are they going to drive up the jet traffic? Because I agree with you, the smaller planes are kind of disappearing, or the ones that are out there are really old. And so I'm really asking, is this investment in these rural airports a good one? Are we going to see more activity in these airports by virtue of these small jets? Or give us some hope for the future is what I'm really asking.
I think the answer, I can say almost without fear of contradiction, the answer to that question is going to be yes. And it's because of the reasons I stated.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you so much for your testimony. And we have one more witness today, John Hay.
Thank you.
Who takes a different position on the measure.
Good afternoon, Representative Barnhart and the committee. My name is John Hay. I am the president and CEO of Hillsborough Air Academy in Hillsborough, Oregon. I live in Washington County. I'm actually here today, bottom line, in opposition to this tax. I think there are a lot of good things that can come from what is written in this tax, but I do have some concerns for it. Hillsborough Air Academy is based in Hillsborough, Oregon. We have campuses in a campus in Troutdale and one in Prineville. All of the campuses that we have opened training our 700 students are based in Oregon. We've made that decision intentionally, although we've had many opportunities to move outside the state of Oregon. And the tax situation is one of the strong reasons why we stay here. And largely, the no sales tax attracts a lot of students to our state as opposed to some other states. We employed 210 employees, flying about 70,000 flight hours per year. So we are a heavy user of fuel, and certainly a company that will be heavily impacted by this tax. I am actually in support of a tax that I'm supportive being taxed in support of the smaller airports around the state of Oregon. We are a heavy user of those airports, and I can see certain aspects of this bill being very beneficial, and would happily support a tax that would be a part of that. I do see two problems that I would like to point out. One of them is the idea of rural air service. As an operator myself, I'm not the airlines. I am a heavy user. But for me as an operator, as a company, to be taxed in support of the rural development of a company or of a community that's somewhere else in the state, it seems like that's a good economic plan to get behind. But it does seem like this is an odd place to tax in support of economic development in another part of the state. It seems like there might be a better place, another vehicle that would be better chosen to support the economic development in that part of the state. And I think it also, in effect, kind of waters down the tax dollars, because who, in effect, would be paid to operate these rural air services? Probably Portland-based airlines. And so they would be receiving those dollars and probably bringing a lot of that back to Portland in the first place, although there would be the added benefit of providing transportation into those rural communities. I think there would be some challenges there as well. And the final thing I'll add, or I want to point out that I do have concern with, is just ensuring that there is parity among competition for companies like myself. There is competition around the state, and there's competition around the nation. And although our neighboring states have fuel taxes that are significantly higher than ours, some of the other states around the nation where there is a lot of flight training do have much lower or at least low taxes. And any increase in costs that we have, of course, lowers our ability to compete. And as you might imagine, operating a flight school is dependent upon good weather in Oregon. That is a choice that we make to be here compared to many of our competitors who operate in states like Arizona, Texas, or other states like that. We've chosen to be here for a reason. I would ask you to cautiously proceed in regards to increasing taxes in an industry that is already hampered by just the environment that we've chosen to be a part of here. And just in general, I think that there is also some concern. There is a concern on my part in the will the money that is going to be distributed from this, will it be distributed to competitors around the state that will then be given some sort of economic operational cost lowering through the dollars that they will be given, as opposed to other operators that may be in the more urban areas, such as Portland area. And I think that I am absolutely in support of supporting those airports with direct dollars to support to maintain their infrastructure, absolutely would even take a higher tax within reason for that in order to support those airports. We know we are a heavy user of that and don't want to withhold dollars from that. But I do want to provide some caution and ask you to weigh those factors as you consider this bill.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Hay? Representative Smith Warren, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I will note that I do have one more witness who asked to be heard. He's not signed up.
Yep. I'll be very brief.
Yep.
So you survey your students and ask whether the fact that we don't have sales tax is a part of why they decide to come and take lessons here?
I don't think
that seems like a rather extraordinary leap for most people that come here don't realize that we don't have sales tax here, and it just seemed like a rather extraordinary statement to.
We advertise it as part of our marketing. We're competing against people in other states. I can tell you that we are the number 5 trainer of Chinese pilots around the world. When we have a lot of visitors will come from China to tour their schools in the United States. And they all know that when they come to Oregon is when they should do all their shopping, because they don't pay taxes on that. Now, they're spending a lot of other dollars in this state while they're here, but they know they can get a better deal while they're here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Hay. Chris Gorich, please. I'll ask you to be very brief because you weren't signed up and I wasn't planning on you.
I apologize. My name is Chris Gorich. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I want to start by saying I'm a 9-year former member of the State Aviation Board, and I want to thank you all for Connect Oregon. It's been hugely valuable to the airports. It's served a lot of people. But it doesn't serve a daily need for Oregon Aeronautics, and that's a critical need that we have. And I am a fan of Oregon Aeronautics. I've watched their revenues fall as fuel sales have dropped, and less fuel sales, that's fuel being burned. That's a good thing for the environment. But if your department is based on fuel sale-based revenue, that creates serious problems, and that's been going down, down, down. They really stretch a nickel at that. But the bill, as it's currently written, it's not going to make them rich by any stretch. 20% will go to air service, 20% to search and rescue. That's not going to help them. The FAA match is tremendous. That's money that comes into the state every year, which is wonderful to help the rural airports, and some states match all of that. Economic development is something that you've heard about already, I won't address. And then the non-NPIS airports, which are the small airports that don't fit into the FAA's category, we'll see some benefit from this. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity. The point's already been made about airline pilots. They're being trained at small airports and not at the military. So all around the state is where the pilot who's sitting in the front of your airplane is going to come from. So there is a benefit in the firefighting. There was one piece of communication that was sent to the committee, I believe, that addressed the issue of international commercial air flights, cargo and passenger, and the impact this would have. The current state law does exempt international air carriers from paying this tax. There's no desire to change that, so just be sure that that's what's in the bill today, and it would not change. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Courage? Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2075. Colleagues, we're going to reschedule another time, House Bill 2351 and House Bill 2398. And with that, the committee is adjourned.